Okay, so I'm going to do my weekly wrap-up discussion for you outside just because I'm working from home and my dogs are being a ginormous pain in the butt. So I left them inside and it's relatively peaceful outside. So that's what we're doing. So anyway, to kind of recap, tie some things together, this week had a lot of moving parts and pieces, and it's not entirely a puzzle, but it might have felt a bit like a puzzle. And that's this week, honestly, is the first time I've sort of topped this stuff in this format because I wanted to see if it worked together. So it's like I said, if it felt a bit a jumble, then that's probably realistic. If it made sense, then fantastic. That's really what I'm after. So what is that thing I'm trying to make sense of? One of the things that the research has sort of pointed out when it comes to what does it mean to have a good life is once you get past all the things that make you happy or sad or give you long-term satisfaction and some, you know, sense that things are going well, at the core of that is really knowing who you are. So the focus in the readings of, so who are you truly? What are you? Who are you? And it takes a lot more work than this one class, quite obviously. But it is an important step that's where most people say they get a genuine sense of what it means to lead a good life, is they know who they are. They know what gives their lives meaning, value, and purpose. And they move forward from that. And it helps them sort of navigate all the adverse waters that we kind of ran into last week. Like when you know who you are, what you're about, you know what the future could be for you, even if things aren't going well now, you're great. You're in charge, right? This is that part of agency where things start to make sense. You're like, these are the things that I control. And so as you sort of walk through this, I kind of step through it. Usually I cover all these in separate weeks. That's why I said it kind of felt like a puzzle piece being pushed together, is these are normally three separate weeks. But the mission statement, many of you, not all of you, honestly, kind of wanted some help on crafting when I give you an actual generic sort of comment, that we're going to actually give you the first steps of doing that here in the next week or so with an assignment called the eulogy assignment. And it's not that morbid. Don't freak out. But part of that, and there's a sense where I understand when people don't want mission statements because they think life is too fluid and they might change. Yes and no. Life is very fluid. Things do change. But we don't change drastically that much. We can. I'm not going to say it doesn't happen. But in my case, I didn't craft a mission statement until I was probably 30, maybe a little older than that. And it's the kind of thing, if you do it right, you realize it just works. It kind of speaks to who you are at the core of your being. And that's, for me, it's framed around being an educator of some sort. Because even when I wasn't teaching, before I got into Friends, before I got into higher ed altogether, I was a trainer. I was a corporate trainer. And I mean, there's just something I always go back to that. I know that's the thing, if something changed, something wildly different happened, I would probably still be in some form of education, training, or teaching. And that's the thing, you realize, even when I was a manager, what I was known for was coaching. So I actually coached other people's teams because they would send them to me. So there's a point like, man, when I look at my history, this is what I do, is I'm a trainer, coach, facilitator, teacher, okay. And when I try to get away from that, I'm not wildly successful, right? So knowing that means, okay, whatever the future holds, it's probably going to look a little bit like that. And it's kind of how I approach everything that I do, even, right? When I play golf, play guitar, do whatever those things are, I'm always trying to learn and educate myself on how to do it better. And that's not to say others don't, but there's a difference where even I actually don't read sheet music. So even the days when I don't have my guitar in front of me, I'm trying to learn to read it because I don't know, I'm weird like that. But it's the kind of thing where then other people have asked me to teach them or teach their kids to play guitar. I'm not a professional. I'm a hack that just had figured a lot of things out. But there again, what do people see? Someone that can help them learn this stuff. So that's important. The vision statement, and people often get these two confused. Right, a mission statement tells you who you are. A vision statement tells you where you want to be in the future. And this actually sort of ties in a little bit to last week's discussion about unity and spirituality and faith is, you know, if you look over the number of, you know, faith traditions or, you know, views like that, if you're Buddhist, Christian, Hindu, Jewish, Muslim, any of the above, almost all of them have these sort of transcendental ideas of what a reality looks like beyond this reality, whether it's nirvana, paradise, heaven, you know, whatever that is, they all have that. And so when people struggle with that and say, but I'm not religious or I don't believe in that stuff, I'm going to still argue that if you really want to think deeply about your vision statement, because this is one of the things I do when I consult, is to argue that your vision statement for where you think your life could be and what the world around you could look like has to almost be transcendental. It like has to be almost so big you may never achieve that here, right? So when I work with organizations and we talk about their vision statement, you know, don't tell me something bland like, I just want to be the biggest company around here, here, and here. You know, what does that actually look like? So a group that I work with, you know, they want to be a really a giant organization that's going to help every youth in the Sedgwick County USD 259 arena. And looking at where they're at, I've had to tell them in a good way, like, you know, your current situation is not going to handle that. And when I've worked with their board, I'm actually a member of the board, I've said, you all have to commit to knowing that this is such a grand vision, you may not even be alive to see it to fruition. Like, that's how you grow really great things. Now, this is why it works in faith traditions, right? People are believing in something that's beyond the life they have right now. For you to have a vision, you know, you can have a vision that says, man, I really want to, like, that's the thing you start to realize, maybe I want to make the world a better place in however way, in however job, career, format you want to do that. It's one of the things why education works for me is I know I can leave a better mark, and I owe it to a lot of people who have helped me get to this position. And am I going to help every person, every kid, every organization I encounter? No, but can I equip enough to carry that on? I hope. Right, that's a vision that I don't know that I can actually sustain myself, but maybe I make a difference. That's a big maybe, right? Sometimes that's why people are a little scared of vision statements. The value statements, I like actually like how Friend states it, that it's how you get there. I'm a very critical of organizations that have mission, vision, and value statements like plastered everywhere, because it's usually just some junk a board, you know, decided, or an administrative executive team decided. And the value statements are meaningful if you're used correctly. They're not stuff you memorize. They're not stuff you paint on a wall. They're the kinds of things that are supposed to help you make a decision when there is no rule book around the problem. And I actually, oddly enough, I learned this at Bank of America, which is not a fantastic company, but it was, I learned a lot there. I'll just say that. And I learned that when I was working on a particular problem and I was frustrated. I'd been 2 weeks on this problem, on this project, and I wasn't getting anywhere. And my boss finally, I told her, you know, I looked in the handbook, I looked in the policy manual, I looked in the procedure manual, I'd looked in all of these things. And I asked her, I'm done. I don't know what to do. And she kind of just looked at me and said, okay, what are our values? And I thought that was the stupidest question or stupidest answer to a question I could imagine, especially this one. And I can't do it anymore, but I rattled off the five values at Bank of America. And the last one, oddly, was called trusting and teamwork. And when I got to that one, it was weird. It's like, oh, I'm not supposed to fix this problem. I'm supposed to actually trust that the team after me fixes the problem. Just because I'm aware of it, it's actually not in my scope. That's why I can't find the answer. She's like, right, you're going to have to let go of things and realize other, like, that's the designation for other groups. That's what they do. And it was so odd for me to realize, oh, that's what value statements are supposed to do when you're stuck in a really difficult spot. How do you make the decision that you're supposed to make without a rule, without a law, without a handbook? You know, if you've got the right values, you can do that. Putting all those together, right? I mentioned being grateful. So there's your gratitude exercise again. Not everybody knows this, but I tend to share this in this class. As you know, if you're from Wichita, I grew up in the Plainview area. You know, I went to Jardine Junior High. I wasn't a middle school then. You know, there's a lot in my past that says I shouldn't be where I'm at. But I had really good teachers in junior high, in high school, in college that, and that's the thing, I didn't even know how you got to college. I had teachers help me. I didn't know anything about grad school. Like, I had all these people that put me in this position that by where I started, I probably shouldn't be where I'm at. And I have a deep sense of obligation and gratitude to pay that back. And that's why I sort of take what I do very seriously. Now, that's the grand scale of gratitude. It's kind of a motivator. But for these exercises, remember, you can keep doing them. The point is that often we get lost in the sense of when things are going poorly, you can get stuck very easily in a negative mindset where you only see the negative, you only see the negative, and you just feel worse, and you feel worse, and nothing goes right. If you can always point at something that's going well, it'll keep you, it's not perfect. You'll still have bad days. I mean, I have bad days where I just write one thing, and it can be a silly thing. I just don't remember who, but I enjoyed reading that somebody really liked their Quick Trip breakfast sandwiches. Okay, never had it. But if that's the thing that gets you through the day, that day, then you should be grateful for it. So we're going to switch gears this week, right? We're going to do a different set of practices as a kind of a reflection. But we'll talk more about that as the week goes on. Just keep on pressing on and keep up the good work.